Mr. Island, good morning to you.
Good morning. Are you, Your Honor, ready?
I think so. We've got people in and out of the courtroom, so you may proceed.
When it's I don't know and I'm not sure, that cannot be probable cause. When an officer is unaware and unable to determine whether or not a crime has been committed, that's insufficient to arrest a citizen and take them away from the scene for further investigation. And especially when you're dealing with an issue of impairment, not by alcohol, but by something else. And that's the question. When you have someone who shows some type of possible impaired judgment, balance problems, those kind of things, and you've been able to exclude alcohol, how do we know that it's not a concussion? Or that it's not low blood sugar or high blood sugar or some type of diabetic response.
I think you're getting off the point, counsel. I think the point is whether or not they had probable cause to stop, and then once they stopped, they observed his physical condition that appeared to be impaired, and then they asked him to give, it wasn't alcohol, then they asked him to give a drug test, and he said, well, I've been taking this other medicine, and now your defense is, since the drug test doesn't test for that particular medicine, then they can't give a drug test, and that's not what the law is with regard to drug tests.
Well,
if you're driving and you're impaired, and the officer wants to take a drug test, and there's probable cause, you either say yes or you refuse, don't you?
Well, that's right. First of all, there is probable cause, but I'll turn to the issue of the drug test since that's the concern. Obviously, that's one of the problems when you're not sure. When you think you want some type of test, you're allowed to ask for a chemical test. You're not allowed to ask for any kind of test you want. And I think that's important because I can't ask for a hair test, a DNA test, a skin test, or anything else. I can only ask for a chemical test.
And if the chemical test comes back positive for a particular chemical that's being tested for, then your client is going to be charged with an impairment under that particular section of the drug.
If the drug, and that's what's important because...
But the fact that it doesn't test for your client's drug is not relevant.
Well, actually, it is, Your Honor, because I think they made it clear that we're really only concerned about drugs of abuse. We're talking about marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamine.
And if he has none of that in there, then I think your client is probably going to be acquitted. But they don't have to guess on what he was taking.
Actually, that's part of the reason the DRE protocol, Your Honor, and that's why I think this court in State versus Daly went ahead and proved it, said we got cops that are out and they're not able to figure out what's going on, so we want to have them examine people, throw out medical issues, make sure we get citizens treated properly, then take them in to screen them to determine whether or not I can ask for a chemical test, and a chemical test is defined by the code as looking only for those potential or those possible drugs. The drugs
when you talk about the code, are you talking about Title 177?
NAC 7, yes.
Right. And the purpose of that is what?
The purpose of that is to show, well, first of all, the legislature has delegated what a chemical test is and how to go through the method to the Department of Health and Human Services.
When a test will be valid such that it can be admissible.
Whether it can be valid, but also in this case, it looks to be even what type of drugs that we're talking about.
But it's all to lay the foundation for the admissibility of the test, isn't it?
That's the primary purpose, but...
Is there another?
Yes.
What?
I would say in this case, it's to exclude that a chemical test does not apply to the drugs that are not drugs of abuse. That's how the code seems to be written. That seems to be what a chemical test is. A chemical test is a very specific, narrow options of tests that we have available to us. It's blood, breath, or urine for certain things, alcohol or the six different prescribed kinds of drugs. It is not any test that an officer may ever want you to submit to. And that's why it's different. It's not just a test. If the legislature had meant just a test, they could have said, the officer asks you for a test, you got to give one. They didn't do that. They narrowed it to chemical tests. Chemical test then was delegated to the Department of Health and Human Services to define
your excuse is because this chemical test won't show whether or not I have this particular drug in my system, I don't have to give the test.
And actually, in this case, the officer had no probable cause. He states, I didn't think it was any of those six drugs. And therefore, that's right, because he didn't think it was any of the drugs that he would want, that he would be allowed to test for, those drugs of abuse. He's not allowed then to try and say, well, it's not a drug I'm allowed to test for, but you've got to give it to me anyways. Because that's what a chemical test is. It's defined under those drugs of abuse. And now if the officer said, hey, I thought he had some cocaine or methamphetamine or something else, that would be a different issue.
The defendant here admitted to have taken was Suboxone, correct?
Correct.
And Suboxone is a drug that treats opiate dependency, isn't it?
It is, but it's not.
Isn't an opiate a drug of abuse?
Well, it's not the six that are defined. It's not methamphetamine, amphetamine, cocaine, phencyclidine, marijuana, and there is an opioid in there, but it's not the opioid. It's to interfere with that issue. And the officer said, went through all the drug categories, and he said, I don't think it's any one of those. I don't think I have no reason to suspect any of those various drug categories.
Or, as a factual matter, at that time, I did not have a suspicion of any on that list?
There's two different times. We have out on the road, no suspicion of anything, other than, this is weird, I got to do something about it. And then at the police station, the DRE is saying, well, I don't think it's any of those six. Something's going on, and it's got to be drugs. But it's not any of the six that we're talking about under Title 177.
At what point in time did the refusal occur?
It was after the DRE was completed, I believe, and then the request for a sample was made, for a urine sample. So the officer at that point thought it was none of the drugs of abuse, the six we're talking about, but asked for a urine sample anyways.
So this rises or falls on the facts of this case?
This case is unique, I think. But it's not unique to the state of Nebraska. It's going to be unique to a lot of circumstances because we're talking about drugs of abuse versus what might something else be.
You're saying that when he got back in custody and the DRE examined him and the DRE concluded that his impairment, whatever it was not caused by any of the six drugs that would be tested for, then there no longer existed probable cause to order that test.
Exactly.
And therefore, since they didn't have authority to order that test, his refusal is not chargeable.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there's insufficient evidence to show that would be, or at least in the alternative, it should be defined as...
Are you conceding this... set of facts, as you say, is unique, is distinguished from, say, you're on the road and there's an officer with limited capabilities and not specially trained.
Well, actually, I'm not, because that's the first issue I assigned was the unqualified officer at the scene has to either exclude medical, has to have somebody trained, an EMT, they do it all the time, it's not a big deal, or have a DRE come in and say, oh yeah, I think this is consistent with drug impairment. Then you can
bring in a DRE at the side of the road?
That seems to be what I read in Daly. They said in the field.
Well, Daly, we weren't talking about probable cause to arrest. We were talking about the protocol for admissibility of expert testimony at trial to prove guilt, weren't
right.
we?
That's true, except for...
Isn't that an entirely different inquiry and purpose?
I don't think so, because when you're talking about whether or not it's admissible and relevant to help, it's both for probable cause and for evidence at trial. And while there's a relaxed standard, it still has to be reliable, even at a motion to suppress hearing. And it seems to be you're saying, first exclude alcohol, then exclude medical, then go to the protocol. And that seems to make sense when an officer says, I don't know what's going on here. He can't say, I'll just arrest and let it figure out later, when that's not reasonable.
Was that what the officer testified to here?
Yes.
That he just threw up his hands?
He did. Basically said, I didn't know what was going on, so I just arrested him for driving under suspension, which was improper, according to the record, and I'll let it sort out later. That's what he did. That's basically what he did. He said, look, I don't know what's going on. I'll just take him in on something else and let it sort itself out later. And that's the problem. He may have been impaired. It was good that the officers may have been involved. There's nothing wrong with what the officers did in terms of taking him off the road. That's the reasonable suspicion part. It's the probable cause to arrest when they didn't exclude the medical.
So they should let him back on the road impaired?
No. But when you're medically impaired, if you're having a seizure or anything else, if you're having any type of problem, you bring in the proper personnel. You know, there's a difference between reasonable suspicion stopping someone on the road, which is going to be proper, and not letting them drive off, versus where you're going to allow it to escalate into a full-blown arrest when it's, I don't know what the answer is.
I think what Justice Castle is suggesting is that we all need to take care about the broader application of what right. you're suggesting. Because when an officer pulls someone over because of certain facts and evident impairment, and then the driver says, well, I haven't been drinking and I haven't done all kinds of drugs, which may coincide with the six, right? But I'm taking heart medication and it makes me loopy.
Right.
And then what?
And they do it all the time. They take them
Don't
home,
they
call family member, they do.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with doing that. In fact, I would expect it, I anticipate it, I appreciate it, I've seen it done. But you can't arrest someone when you don't know what the issue is. But if they're impaired, you find a way to make it safe. But you don't take them to jail unless you know they've committed a crime.
Well, driving under suspension is a crime.
Except for not in this case, Your Honor.
What's that?
Not in this case. He wasn't under suspension, Your Honor. He had surrendered his Nebraska privileges and obtained Texas privileges because he
were
was
you driving
a Texas
on
resident.
An expired license?
No,
then?
He was no longer
no
a Nebraska resident.
Okay, no violation then.
No violation, okay. Exactly.
Wasn't the evidence that Deputy Shepard and another deputy questioned Mr. Rothenberger to determine whether they had, I believe they called it, do we have an impairment case or do we have a medical case? And they concluded that there was no indication of a medical problem. Wasn't that the testimony?
Well, the testimony was is both unqualified officers said, I don't know what it is, I don't think it's medical, so let's just arrest it, let's say it's drug impairment. That's not
Did Mr. Rothenberger ever ask for medical attention or indicate that he suffered from any sort of illness during at any point during the investigation?
No, but that cannot be fundamental because so many people undergoing problems for medical conditions don't realize it or understand it. And that's consistent, I think, from any of your experience or mine as well, that if you're having a problem, you don't know that you're having a problem to articulate it.
When we look at the totality of the circumstances, though, isn't that one of the circumstances that goes into the mix?
It is, except for it's the I don't know. That's the primary one here. The officer says, I don't know what's happening.
Before you sit down, I have one
more
question.
No problem.
Have we ever said that the chemical test to be performed is an element of the crime of refusal? Can you point me to anything in our jurisprudence that suggests that that's an element?
Maybe I'm not understanding. To refuse a chemical test, it has to be a chemical test. So
that the substance being tested for is the substance that the defendant took. Have we ever suggested that those need to match up?
Well, alcohol would be one, drug, not necessarily saying it has to match up, except for the idea that it's not a chemical test and it's not looking for a drug, or specifically a drug.
Your position is that the legislature just didn't include enough drugs.
My position is they realized that lots of people have medications and they don't always necessarily know, and they were concerned about drugs of abuse and not, like, if I have anti-seizure medication, and I'm not on it, I'm actually impaired versus when I'm on my medication. And there's no way they could mean that I would be driving while impaired because I don't, when I have my medication, I don't have enough of my medication. They would suggest that would be ridiculous to think that. That would be my position, that they're really concerned about drugs of abuse, and I understand that. That makes more sense. And not that I'm trying to rush off, but I know my time's up. Are there any other questions that before I leave?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nathan Lewis, on behalf of the State of Nebraska. The three issues in this case are the validity of the arrest, the sufficiency of the evidence on the refusal charge, and the denial of the appellant's proposed jury instructions. If time permits, I'll briefly address all three issues. As far as the first issue, the validity of the address, the arrest, State maintains there was probable cause to arrest for DUI and driving without insurance. As far as the arrest for DUI, we disagree with the appellant's assertion that his arrest was invalid for DUI because police didn't conduct a DRE evaluation prior to his arrest, which he claims is a prerequisite.
What was the reason for the stop?
The reason for the stop was that a caller had called in and reported to dispatch that he was following Mr. Rothenberger's vehicle and was weaving all over the road.
And then did the officer observe that?
Yes, yeah, when the officer finally caught up to him, the officer, same things.
So that was a reason to stop, right?
Yeah, there's no dispute.
Okay, and so then the officer reasonably believes, based on that driving, that he's impaired.
Yes.
And what does he do next? Does he proceed to give him sobriety tests to eliminate alcohol as a cause?
They attempt to. I mean, after seeing the vehicle swerving and fluctuating drastically in speed, he tries to make a stop. The vehicle doesn't stop for a quarter of a mile. So finally, he uses the sirens to get to alert the vehicle, get his attention. Rothenberg finally stops. He can't get the window down because the car's in gear, so it takes some time to even figure out how to get the window down in the car.
So there's evidence of obvious impairment.
Oh, yeah. There's. I don't think there's any dispute with that.
Okay. Now, does the police officer at that point in time have to make a diagnosis before arresting him for driving under impairment?
No, and that's our point here. A DRE evaluation in an actual diagnosis is simply not a prerequisite to arresting for DUI based on drugs. We're aware of no authority.
Well, at least suspicion of that. Some suspicion of some type of impairment.
Sure.
The officer doesn't know what type of impairment he's suffering from, but he's obviously driving impaired. So he makes the arrest, and then he takes him into custody.
Yes.
And then what happened?
After he's taken into custody, they take him to the police station where another deputy's there. He is trained in DRE. They go through, or at least attempt to go through, the DRE protocol. There's an initial examination of his eyes and his pupils. They attempt to do field sobriety tests, but again, they can't because the guy's so impaired. They aren't even safely able to do that. And they ask him to submit, and he refuses.
So there wasn't any determination made by the DRA at that point that he was not impaired by any of the drugs that are prohibited?
Well, the DRE expert was of the opinion that he was on drugs. Pinpoint which one. That's our position. They don't have to. But as far as the arrest...
So once they get him in the station and he's still impaired and he's not functioning normally, at that point in time, police have the right to say, we want a blood test of your urine or a urine test to check for either alcohol or drugs?
Yes, by statute. If a person has been arrested for a driving-related offense or they've been in a motor vehicle accident, an officer has reasonable grounds to believe that that person's under the influence of alcohol or drugs, just drugs in general, then they can require that person to submit to a chemical test of their blood, breath, or urine.
And so it's the refusal that becomes the issue in this case.
Well, it's challenging the arrest, too, and I think there is some significant things that could be clarified here with respect to arresting and DREs not being a prerequisite. But I think that is the primary issue in this case.
What was the basis for the arrest, then?
The amount of evidence indicating impairment and the fact that they ruled out alcohol or a medical condition being the cause of the impairment.
Was the suspension, is that a red herring, or is that... something that...
I don't think the suspension... The party stipulated at the suppression hearing that his license was simply expired rather than suspended. And I guess my hesitation with arguing that would provide a valid basis for arrest in this case is that he had all Texas paperwork, he had a Texas license, and we have reciprocity for out-of-state licenses. And so I guess I have some hesitation there since I don't... We have no evidence that his Texas license is valid.
Well, if he's not a resident of Nebraska anymore and he's got a valid Texas driver's license, then he can certainly drive in Nebraska.
Right.
Okay. So what's the basis for taking him in custody?
The officers testified between the suppression hearing and trial. Their testimony was that it was based on driving under suspension and DUI, based on drugs. We submit that our law does not require a DRE as a prerequisite to arresting for DUI. There's no authority that says this. To the extent the appellant's relying on Daly, it clearly imposes no such requirement. As Justice Stacey indicated, that case didn't even involve a challenge to a DUI arrest based on probable cause. It simply involved the admissibility of a DRE expert's testimony in the context of Daubert, and in holding that such testimony was admissible in the context of Daubert, this court specifically explained a DRE may not occur until after a DUI arrest, and it may not be done by the arresting officer. And additionally, this court in Daly reiterated the well-established principle of law that whether impairment is caused by alcohol or drugs, a conviction for DUI may be sustained by either a law enforcement's observations of a defendant's intoxicated behavior or a defendant's poor performance on field sobriety tests. So Daly does not say, nor does it suggest, that the preliminary evaluation is a prerequisite to arresting for DUI based on drugs. Similarly, from a practical standpoint, it would make no sense for that to be a prerequisite before than any time a defendant simply refuses to participate in a DRE, or if the defendant is too impaired. As in this case, an officer has to simply impose a legitimate basis to believe they're impaired, has to simply let him go. We would submit that doesn't make sense. As far as the second issue, the sufficiency of the evidence on the refusal charge, we disagree with the appellant's assertion that the evidence was insufficient because police failed to establish he was under the influence of one of the six particular drugs that Title 177 indicates can be detected through a chemical urine analysis. The appellant's position, as we understand it, is that police must identify the particular drugs as being one of the six drugs before a defendant can even be required to submit to a chemical test, let alone cited or prosecuted for the offense of refusal.
How would one do that practically?
Well, practically speaking, it doesn't make sense, Your Honor, and then first and foremost, that's our response. To require somebody to prove or identify what substance or drugs are under the influence of doesn't make sense without the chemical test. That's the purpose of a chemical test.
Did the DRA in this case make a determination that in his opinion or her opinion that the defendant was not under the influence of any of the six proscribed drugs?
No, the DRE expert didn't make that determination one way or the other, but we would submit he or she doesn't have to. When we look at our law, when we look at our statutes, our DUI statute prohibits somebody from driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol or any drug. And similarly, our implied consent
refusal
statute.
I think the point of the defendant's argument is that the DRE did make a determination that none of these drugs were involved, and therefore you really didn't have a basis for requesting a drug test because you made a determination that he wasn't under the influence of any of these six drugs.
Right, that's the appellant's position, and our response is that Title 177 and those six drugs are irrelevant for purposes of requesting a chemical test. Title 177, that definition is not controlling. Our state statutes are. They say that you can't drive under the influence of any drug. And as far as requesting chemical tests, an officer has grounds to believe, reasonable grounds to believe, that are under the influence of alcohol or just drugs in general, no mention of these six drugs. You can request a chemical test of their blood, breath, or urine.
Is reasonable grounds to request the chemical test, is that a totality evaluation?
Yes.
And so prior to the test, one of the items in the totality, is this correct, is the DRE's comment to the Justice Wright's referring to? I don't think it's one of the six. Is that the mix of the grounds prior to the request?
If you had a DRE done and they're of the opinion that somebody's under the influence of a drug, I think that would factor into reasonable grounds to require a chemical test. I don't think you have to have that prior to requesting a chemical test.
But I'm more being fact specific, not generalizing. So in this case, is that a correct statement of the evidence that prior to the test, a DRE expressed the view, I don't think this defendant is impaired, though he may be, is not impaired under one of the six? That's what I think. I'm trained in the area.
Yeah, my recollection of the record is that the DRE expert was of the opinion he was under the influence of a drug but didn't identify a particular drug or drugs.
Oh, not an expression of not one of the six. I guess I need to.
I don't recall any testimony indicating that I don't believe it was one of the six.
Okay.
I mean, if that's there, it's there. I don't want to misrepresent the record, but I don't recall that.
But you claim that doesn't make any difference.
No, it doesn't. Based on our statutes and our statutes, I'm out of time here. If I could briefly finish.
You may finish.
Our implied consent and refusal statute authorizes chemical tests of blood, breath, or urine, which further illustrates
it's the evidence of impairment that triggers the right to request a chemical test.
Yes.
Okay.
And chemical tests aren't governed by the urine analysis in Title 177. They can also be done by blood. It's set forth in 60-6201, subsection 3. They aren't limited to urine and the definition of drugs that can be detected in urine. So we submit they can be done for purposes of detecting any drug.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, we ask you to confirm the judgment of this report.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is Dixonman versus Dickinson Land Surveyors, Inc.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Welsh, good morning.